This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Dirt Show. This is the Supreme Court decision, the unanimous decision of the Supreme Court that allows former President Trump to run to become future President Trump. Colorado tried to stop it. So did a number of other states. And the Supreme Court unanimously said no. The 14th Amendment, by its own terms, doesn't permit the barring of a candidate on grounds of insurrection. It requires an act of Congress, which hasn't happened. We'll talk about that at length for the remainder of the show, but I just wanted to bring you up to date on two other important developments. One in the Phony Willis case. On Friday, we had closing arguments, and a number of things became clear to me. One, clearly this judge knows. He has to know. He's a smart guy. He has to know that they were not being truthful with him, that Phony Willis was not being truthful with him, that her boyfriend was not being truthful, that her boyfriend's friend were not being truthful. But does the judge have the courage to look the elected DA in the eye and say, I don't believe you? No, I don't think he does. And so the real issue is, will he find two things? Number one, that it's enough that there be an appearance of conflict of interest or an appearance of impropriety or an appearance of injustice, or does there have to be an actual conflict of interest? And if he does find that an appearance is enough, will he find such an appearance? It's so obvious there is such an appearance. So I think if he finds that an appearance of justice is enough, he'll rule that they get disqualified. But he may decide that no, there has to be an actual, and let the defendants appeal it. So, and I think that appeal, I don't know the law of Georgia, but I think that appeal would be what's called an interlocutory appeal or mandamus or something, in which case it could go up to the appellate court before the trial, and that would delay the trial beyond the election. I'm just not sure about that, but that's an interesting issue. The other interesting development, of course, is that Israel has accepted the ceasefire that has been proposed by the United States, a six-week ceasefire in exchange for the release of 40 hostages. And Hamas has turned it down and said, no, we're not going to give you the names of the hostages. We're not going to tell you whether they're alive or dead. You're going to have to go, you have to just accept it as is. And we're not going to tell you how many prisoners you have to free. First, the very idea of having to free a murderer, a convicted murderer, in exchange for an innocent one-year-old child is so obnoxious, but that's what Hamas is demanding, and that's what the United States is supporting. So we'll see what happens. I had an interesting debate today with one of the Hamas supporters, one of the PLO heads, but who supports Hamas, and he categorically looked me and Pierce Morgan in the eye and said, Hamas does not use human shields. And I called him on it, and I said, I can prove it. And I said, in my book, War Against the Jews, I have a quotation from a leader of Hamas who acknowledges, boasts about it. And he said, oh, what's the name? What's the name? And of course, I was in the middle of a live interview and I couldn't find the name of the guy right away. I said, I'd find it. And I found it. I put it online. And now you can get it online from me, my Substack or whatever it is, or my Twitter. And you'll see not only the name of the guy who says that we love to use children and women as human shields, who brags about it. You can see the videotape of him saying it in Arabic, translated into English. And I hope Pierce Morgan puts that on his show to demonstrate that the other guest was just lying through his teeth when he said Hamas doesn't use human shields. Everybody knows they do, and they're proud of it. And some of the human shields are willing human shields. So, you know, they're not what you would actually call honest, innocent civilians, but that's the way they're ranked by CNN and MSNBC. Speaking of CNN and MSNBC, let's turn to the Supreme Court decision in this case called Donald Trump versus Norma Anderson, decided today. Just about everybody on MSNBC and CNN got it wrong. They were sitting around gloating when Colorado took Trump's name off the ballot, and all their legal experts, their great legal experts, were all quoting Professor Lawrence Tribe, my former colleague, and Judge Michael Lutek, a former judge, saying, oh, of course, the 14th Amendment to the Constitution permits it because the 14th Amendment says that a person can be disqualified. Let's see, exact term. No person should be a senator, et cetera, et cetera. If he shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion. And they said that was self-enforcing. You don't need anything for that. And right from the beginning, on this show, many other shows, in op-eds, in my book, Get Trump, I pointed to Section 5 of the same 14th Amendment, which they were deliberately ignoring. And I said the Supreme Court would decide this case based on Section 5. Here's what Section 5 says. The Congress shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article, meaning the disqualification of somebody on the basis of insurrection. Of course, it's so obvious when I read the 14th Amendment, you know, for the 1,000th time, but read it with this in mind, it was so clear to me that the framers intended, if you're gonna disallow the leading candidate for president from running for president, if you're going to deny millions of people the right to vote, at least you need to have a procedure. You need to know what the burden of proof is. Is it by a preponderance of evidence, clear and convincing evidence, proof beyond a reasonable doubt? Who gets to decide it? A judge? A jury? A secretary of state? These are all, who gets to define what an insurrection means? Was what happened after the Black Lives Matter protests an insurrection? Are attempts by anti-Israel groups to block access to buildings and to modes of transportation an insurrection? Was what happened on January 6th an insurrection? What role does the alleged president or candidate have to have played? Does he have to have been there? Can he have encouraged it? We don't know the answers to those questions because constitutions are written in broad terms. They're not self-enforcing. And particularly this provision of the Constitution said unequivocally that Congress, not the states, Congress has the right to enforce it. And as all nine justices said, can you imagine a situation in which every state could come up with a different rule as to what constitutes disqualification? In some states, it could be the Secretary of State. Some states, there you need an elected Secretary of State, just somebody appointed. In some states, it could be a single judge, as in Illinois. In some states, it could be the Court of Appeals, like in Colorado. You can't have a federal system in which every state gets to determine what the meaning of the Constitution is and gets to disqualify a candidate for president based on their own personal reading of the Constitution. The Supreme Court was unanimous in that regard. Three liberal justices said, however, the court had gone too far and that maybe there are other enforcement mechanisms short of congressional legislation. They weren't clear what they might be, and maybe the court shouldn't have decided the broader issue. It should have just decided that in the context of this case, there was not enough to disqualify. Justice Barrett wrote an interesting statement in her concurring opinion, which I think was right. She basically said, look, there may be some differences of opinion, but the bottom line is that everybody agrees with the result. And so she said this, for present purposes, our differences are far less important than our unanimity. All nine justices agree on the outcome of this case. That is the message Americans should take home. I agree with her. That's the message. And I have to tell you, the man I think who probably takes credit for bringing about this unanimous result is John Roberts, who's a great Chief Justice. I was one of the few liberals who supported him when he got nominated for Chief Justice, because I knew his reputation as an appellate lawyer. And he went to Harvard Law School. And he had become the go-to appellate lawyer in Washington, D.C., and I thought he was extraordinarily well qualified to serve as Chief Justice of the United States. So I supported his nomination, even though some liberal colleagues of mine did not. And he sees his job, or among his jobs, as bringing the court together, as trying to preserve the integrity and dignity of the court. And I suspect he had to work very hard on the three concurring justices to persuade them all to join in the decision, even though they don't join in the entire opinion of the court. They would have decided some of the issues somewhat differently. But the point is, it was one final judgment, and the final judgment was what I predicted it would be, and what the MSNBC and CNN clack predicted it would not be. You know, once the argument was held and it became clear to everybody how it was going, suddenly CNN developed a little bit of amnesia and started talking about, well, maybe the Supreme Court will reverse this. But look at what they said before the argument and go back and watch. I wish television stations would have a little, maybe once a week, where they go back and they tell the audience what their experts predicted and then show what the outcome is. CNN would get like a zero score. Without bragging too much, I would get so far a 100 score. Every one of my predictions has turned out to be correct. Not because I'm any smarter than Tribe or any smarter than Judge Luttek. Well, I am a lot smarter than Judge Luttek. He's a little bit of a jerk. But it's not because I'm any smarter. It's because I'm more honest. Because when I make predictions, I make them based on the law, on what the law is, not what I want it to be. I don't make predictions based on wishful thinking. I certainly don't make them based on self-fulfilling prophecies. Make the prediction because you hope it will become true. So I have a way for all of you to make money. I'm Jim Cramer now. I'm telling you how to make money. Here's what you do. You listen to MSNBC. You listen to CNN. You read the New York Times. And whatever they say about the law, go to Las Vegas and bet on the exact opposite. And you'll win. You don't even have to share your winnings with me, even though it would be useful to follow my predictions, because they have turned out to be correct. Again, not smarter, not any harder working, although I work very hard, but because I follow the law. I don't allow my personal opinions to in any way influence my predictions. And so when you do that, you're much more likely to be right about making a prediction than if you just make a prediction based on wishful thinking. A lot of people are wondering whether this decision on Colorado, and really implication the other states as well, will have any impact on the really important case. Well, this is probably equally important, but the very important case as to whether the president has any immunity. I don't know. I mean, you know, there's always the possibility that there was a little bit of horse trading going on, and maybe the Chief Justice may have promised something in the immunity case in order to get the three justices. I don't think so, but it's possible. I remember when I was a law clerk, there was horse trading that went on among the justices. I doubt that happened in this case. So what do I think is going to happen in the immunity case? I have to tell you, I don't know. I'm not going to make a prediction. It's just too uncertain. I can tell you what I think should happen. I think both sides have gone much too far in that case. Both sides have exaggerated their views. Trump's lawyer made a terrible tactical mistake when he was asked the question, does your position go so far as to mean that if a president ordered the SEALs to come and kill his political opponent, he couldn't be criminally prosecuted? And instead of saying, of course he could be, there's no immunity for that. Now let me explain. Well, maybe he'd have to be impeached. But the first answer is so obvious. Of course he has no immunity, just like the first answer should have been when the three college presidents, Harvard, MIT, and Penn, were asked, Is it permissible on your campus for somebody to call for the genocide of the Jews? Of course, the answer to it, no. Now, let me explain. But instead, they said, well, it depends on the context. You know, you got to have a little common sense when you answer questions like that. So I don't think that Trump's position is going to be sustained, but I am not sure whether or not the position of Jack Smith on the other side will be sustained, or whether the lower court decision, which went very far, will be sustained. I think that the right result is that presidents have some immunity, but not a lot, but that whatever immunity they have lasts beyond them being out of office. I'll give you an example, a simple example. President Eisenhower had to send some troops down south to enforce the Brown versus Board of Education decision. He did it as president to see that the law be enforced. He did it as president. It was within the scope of his presidency. And let's assume as a result of him sending them down in a way that may have not been the best possible way, either a soldier got killed or a student who was trying to integrate the school got killed. Somebody got killed. And after Eisenhower leaves office, his successor, in this case, was a Democrat, different party, success, I think we're going to prosecute him. I think we're going to prosecute him for negligence, recklessness, etc. Of course he'd have immunity. Of course he'd have immunity in two ways. Number one, his act would be covered by immunity in the way that congressional actions are covered and judicial actions are covered. Now, congressional actions are in the Constitution. Judicial actions aren't, but they've been implied from the role of the judiciary. So should executive actions be implied, just like executive privilege has been implied. And the fact that he's no longer president can't change that. You can't lose your immunity once you're no longer president. Otherwise, immunity makes no sense. Otherwise, you can then be prosecuted for what you did while president after you leave the presidency. So I think the Supreme Court would have denied review had it just wanted to affirm the lower court decision. I suspect there are at least four justices, maybe only four. That's the trick of Supreme Court review. You need only four to review a case, but then you need five to reverse. So sometimes you can get a review, but not a reversal. My suspicion is that they reviewed the case because they don't want to affirm it completely. I could be wrong, and I'm not going to put my reputation as a 100% predictor on the line with this one because it's too complicated. But and I wouldn't bet widows and orphans money on that outcome. So don't take my view and take it to Las Vegas. But if I had to guesstimate, I would say there's a substantial chance that at least some of the justices will find some immunity, which would then carry over to after they're no longer president. So I think that's the likely outcome, but I'm not absolutely positive of that. I am positive that the decision of the Supreme Court 9-0 was absolutely right, and that Judge Luttig and Professor Tribe and Jamie Raskin were just dead wrong. And I think they have to know it. If the shoe were on the other foot, if this were the reverse, if there were a Democratic president and some Republicans try to take him off the ballot, these same three, I think, would be jumping up and down and seeking a very, very different result. But hypocrisy is the name of the game in Washington, D.C. Tragically, it's also the name of the game in academia today. Many, many academics are dishonest, totally dishonest. They just, they know better, but they read the Constitution in ways that satisfy their own ideology. You know, they think the Constitution is written for me, but not for thee. And they don't care about the Constitution the way John Roberts does and the way I do. And it's too bad because I think it really does trivialize the Constitution and lead to the kinds of polls that show that fewer Americans today have faith in the objectivity in the Supreme Court than they did in years past. Look, it's always been an institution that's imperfect. It's always had some terrible decisions. Give you just two examples in history. Putting 110,000 Americans of Japanese descent or origin in camps against their will. I don't use the word concentration camps because that is reminiscent of Germany. They weren't. They were camps that were not designed to hurt people. Of course, it hurt them to be away from their companies, from their businesses, from their friends. But the Supreme Court of the United States, in a liberal decision written by a liberal justice, upheld the detention of Japanese Americans. Horrible, horrible racist decision. Liberals did it too, liberals and conservatives alike. The same thing happened when the Supreme Court in, I think, 1929 upheld a decision that allowed states to sterilize against their will people who were thought to be, quote, imbeciles. And Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes said, three generations of imbeciles are enough. I don't know who he was referring to, because it took about three generations of justices before they reversed that decision and held it unconstitutional. But the idea that you can sterilize somebody on the basis of some psychiatric prognosis that maybe their child will be genetically imbecilic, whatever that might mean. And we know that some mental illnesses are not transmitted genetically. So a terrible, terrible series of decisions. But the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has made many mistakes. They're not a perfect institution, as Justice Jackson once said. He talked about we're not perfect. We're not final because we're perfect. He said we're only perfect because we're final. He used another word rather than perfect, but that's what he meant. And so the Supreme Court is like any other institution. It's nine human beings, but they're supposed to be above politics. And generally they are. They weren't in Bush versus Gore, 5-4, five Republicans voting against five Democrats. This was a 9-0 decision. I wish that Bush versus Gore had been a 9-0 decision. It probably would have gone the other way if it had been a 9-0 decision. But in any event, that's what the decision is. And it means Trump will be on the ballot in every single state. Right now, he's ahead in the polls. You know my views. I've said it over and over again. One of the reasons I support the Supreme Court's decision is I have a constitutional right to vote against Donald Trump for the third time, just like many of you out there have a constitutional right to vote for him for the third time. Some of you probably will vote for him for the first time, maybe the second time. That's your right. Secretaries of state, judges, prosecutors shouldn't be able to take that right away from you, either through this absurd notion of disqualifying you under the 14th Amendment or putting you on trial so many times that you can't run an effective campaign. All of these trials should be put off until after the election. You should not be able to put on trial a man running for president of the United States and have his trials as they're now scheduled. One is trial scheduled in March. That's a laughable case. But it's going to be tried in New York, and so it probably will result in a conviction because the guy's name is Trump, and the others are going to be tried in the District of Columbia in Florida and Fulton County. There shouldn't be trials, and they shouldn't rush these trials in order to interfere with the election. So Trump's lawyers are right to try to slow these down and make sure that none of them occur until after the election. And by the way, at least as to two of them, if he's convicted, even if he's elected, he can't interfere with those decisions. They could sentence him. He might not be able to serve his sentence until after he's finished his presidency, but he could be convicted. And so I think the better result would be to have these trials not being conducted right in the midst of the campaign. Tomorrow's Super Tuesday, and his first trial starts in just a short period of time. And the other trials would have been during the height of the primary season, but for the fact that the Supreme Court granted certiorari in the immunity case. So we'll see what happens. We're staying on this. You're going to hear from me, and we'll follow it. Now, before we get to letters, the New York, or one of the premieres of my of the movie made about me, it's called The Trials of Alan Dershowitz. By the way, it got phenomenal reviews in lots of newspapers. It was done by a great filmmaker named John Curtin, and a raw and candid film where Dershowitz pleads his own case amidst brilliance and controversy, best film award, etc. You know, a headline-rattling documentary riveting a fresh perspective on the provocative and controversial criminal defense lawyer, a phenomenal, incredibly entertaining. Okay, so you can watch it if you're in New York. It's at Lincoln Center tomorrow night. It's at the, what's it called? IFC Center, 323 6th Avenue. IFC, FC obviously stands for Film Center. Maybe it's International Film Center. I don't know, but it's at Lincoln Center. And you can go online and you can get tickets. And there's a discussion afterwards. So I hope you will go and I hope you'll enjoy it if you're in New York. If not, we're hoping that it'll be picked up by some media, television, or streaming service, and you'll be able to watch it from the comfort of your home. Okay, letters. Why does the Biden administration continue to fund universities like Berkeley when it allows anti-Semitism to be tolerated in violation of the law? It's a good question. Berkeley has always been a place where free speech for thee, but not for me, free speech on the left, but not on the right. And, you know, pro-Israel speakers are banned. You know, there are, I think, 13 clubs at the University of California Law School, 13 clubs whose constitutions were amended to ban, this is a state school, to ban any Zionist speakers. Meetings, I can't speak about the election. I can't speak about abortion. I can't speak about the Constitution. Neither can the dean of the law school, because he describes himself as a scientist. So don't talk to me about Berkeley and free speech. Berkeley has never been supportive of free speech. It's only been supportive of left-wing free speech, but it would always ban free speech that it doesn't agree with, and so it's doing it today. Okay, hey, Dershowitz, you're a creepy little Demo-rat. Okay, I read some of these things. Who is it from? Allen Nation. Okay. Let's see. I got a lot of nasty ones today. I'll just read some of them, but not all of them. Most Michiganders and people from Michigan back Israel. We just have a noisy conclave pitching a stink over Israel protecting itself from Hamas. Okay. But the next one says, if Biden doesn't win Michigan, he won't win. I don't agree with you. And by the way, I think he will win Michigan without regard to whether or not Muslim and Arab voters stay home. There are enough of them, and they're not going to stay home. Who are they going to support? They're going to support Donald Trump, the guy who they believe enacted a Muslim ban, even though it wasn't exactly that. But they're not going to vote. They're not going to stay home. Okay. Back to the what's going on at universities. These pogroms, and that's what they are. What happened at Berkeley the other day is Jewish students were assaulted, hit, spit at, called dirty Jew. This is at the University of California, a state-sponsored university. And what have they done about it? Not very much. These pogroms are what drove my Jewish grandparents to flee all the way from northern Siberia to the United States, circa 1890. That's when my grandfather came in 1889, my grandmother about 1900, and my grandparents on the other side, 1906, 1908, things like that. My grandfather, who served, this is a letter, who served in both world wars because of his gratitude for the United States, providing such a place for him to be born and grow up. He would be beyond furious at this obscene garbage, the renewal of Jewish hatred. It bothers me more than words can express. It also bothers me more than words can express. But I'm going to fight back. I'm not going to take it. Hit a Jew, we sue you. We're bringing lawsuits against these universities. We're bringing lawsuits against the people who have attacked Jews. We're not going to just give in the way Jews had to do in Nazi Germany. We're going to fight back. Here, the fact that you would never vote Republican is why you cannot be trusted. I never said that. I have voted Republican. I voted for the Republican governor of Massachusetts. I voted, I would say, two or three times. And if the right Republican came forward, I'd vote for him. I'd be very supportive of Nikki Haley if she ran. But I'm not going to, I don't pick who I vote for generally based on party, though if the candidates are equal, I generally prefer the platform of the Democrats over the platform of the Republicans. But I'm not loyal to any party. I'm loyal to the United States of America. Okay. Oh, here's an interesting one. If there is a risk of Jewish pogroms in the United States, would you advise and recommend that Jewish Americans exercise their Second Amendment right and purchase a firearm? Are you reconsidering your position that all Americans have a fundamental right to bear arms to defend themselves? Look, I think all Americans have a fundamental right to bear arms. It's in the Second Amendment. I wouldn't have written the Second Amendment had I been at the convention, but it's there, so I think you have a right to bear arms. I think Jews have a right to depend on the police to protect them. And any Jew who wants to have a gun to protect themselves, God bless them, and the Second Amendment protects them. But the police have the primary obligation to protect all citizens without regard to religion or race. See you tomorrow.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.